In the year of my grandfather's birth, 1869, Ulysses S. Grant became president, and General Nathan Bedford Forrest, CSA, resigned as Grand Wizard and dissolved the recently formed Invisible Empire of the Ku Klux Klan, 50 miles south of my grandfather's birthplace in Tennessee. On the day of my grandfather's death in 1960, John F. Kennedy was campaigning for the Democratic nomination for president, and Martin Luther King Jr. was holding a strategy session in Montgomery, Alabama, on the new student sit-in movement. The year 1869 is almost as close to 1776 as to 1960. Born in the 19th century, dying in the 20th, George Huddleston lived mentally in the 18th, the century of yeoman farmers and revolutionary Democrats. His congressional career stretched from 1915 to 1937, and his views won him, at various turns, the labels Bolshevik, Socialist, Liberal, and finally, the Conservative Gentleman from Birmingham, Alabama, and the Darling of Wall Street. But at the most difficult moments, when his political life was on the line, he always called himself a Thomas Jefferson Democrat. To him, the meaning was self-evident. In fact, the term encompassed a set of complications, even contradictions, that originate in Jefferson himself and the Revolutionary Age, when the new republic was working out what kind of society it wanted to be. By our standards, George Huddleston ended his career repudiating everything he had stood for at the start. By his own lights, he remained true to a core of belief, the heartwood within the rings of modern interpretation, something old and hard and knotty. He believed in the right and ability of ordinary people to run their own lives, and he distrusted any concentration of wealth or power that threatened to take that right away. This core sustained him until the age moved on, and then it brought him to grief, public defeat added to private misery, leaving him with not much more than his fierce pride. When I was a boy, my grandfather meant little to me. He was the Solomonic figure at the center of my mother's tales about a raucous household of five children. The stories always followed the same path, from civil war or rebellion to gruff, essentially good-humored restoration. These were comedies, and to me, their moral was that a big family with lots of children and dogs was happier than my own. The dogs made a far deeper impression on me than my grandfather, especially the heroic Great Dane, Duke, whom a cop shot through the neck as the dog chased a bicycle. Duke survived, but the cop, whose bullet just missed hitting my mother, was suspended from the force on orders of Representative Huddleston. He was the unquestioned authority who only had to utter a name to quiet the thousand petty disputes that broke out daily among his offspring. I knew that he was nearly twice as old as my grandmother when he married at age 48, and 90 when he died. And though he died just 6 months before my birth, I always assumed that he'd been dead for decades. My main impression was that he was old, impossibly old. When I was 13 and my grandmother died, I inherited my grandfather's pocket watch, a pair of Civil War muskets, his infantryman's sword from the Spanish-American War, and a set of brass knuckles, all of which deepened my sense that he and I belonged to different civilizations. A few years ago, I asked my mother if her father's family had owned slaves. She sighed, as if I'd finally raised the subject she'd always dreaded. "Only a dozen," she said, "and not on a cotton plantation, but on a hardscrabble farm in the bluegrass country of Middle Tennessee, all of them freed by defeat in the Civil War several years before my grandfather was born. Still, slave owners. The stain of the South, even a small one, lay upon us. The news shocked me, though it seemed to implicate her rather than me, as if the sins of the fathers have a statute of limitations at the third generation. Instead of personal culpability or the heavy hand of ancestral guilt, I felt mildly excited to learn of the family's connection to the great American crime. History, any history, confers meaning on a life.